Welcome to Intel on AI, a podcast series that brings you the latest on cutting-edge tech driving artificial intelligence in the enterprise today. And now your hosts, Derek Osborne and Emily Hudson.
Hello and welcome. My name is Emily Hudson.
And I'm Derek Osborne.
And this is another edition of the Intel on AI podcast. Today, our guest is Dr. Jonathan Hall, the scientific lead at Precigen. Welcome, Dr. Hall.
Thanks very much. Pleasure to talk to you.
Could you give us a little bit of background on Precigen and your experience and what you're doing there?
Of course. Well, Precigen is a medical AI company, specifically in the imaging space. So medical companies, institutes, hospitals have a large amount of medical data that they often struggle to analyze, especially with people looking through large numbers of records. And imaging is one of those areas where humans are able to see things clearly with the human eye, but are not able to understand the full picture over many, many thousands of examples. So we at Precigen have AI imaging technology that's able to understand and find patterns and do analytics on thousands and thousands of medical images in order to turn it into a product that might be a useful diagnosis or assessment tool. And we partner with medical institutes and create products for different industries. And our main industry that we're focusing on at the moment is the IVF industry with Lifespera.
Could you tell us a little bit about the IVF industry and what that is and the experience that a patient would have within that area?
Yeah, of course. So IVF stands for in vitro fertilization, and it's one of the main processes that people go through for an assisted reproductive technology technique. That is, people who are not able to have children, if they have a particular condition or they're struggling with infertility, they may go to one of these IVF clinics in order to assist the reproduction. What generally happens is they go in there and their prospective mother will have eggs removed and then they'll be fertilized in the laboratory. And then when they have grown to a couple of days old, they will then be re-implanted back into the prospective mother. And then hopefully they'll be able to conceive in this way, like compared with normally. The only issue is that it's an invasive procedure. It's very, very expensive, costing up to $10,000, between $5,000 and $10,000. In most countries, it's around about that range and only has a 20% success rate or less. So people are having to go a large number of times, so it can easily become $50,000 to $100,000 for a child. And they have to take the hormones, it's very stressful, and then there's a lot of disappointment at the end of it if they're unsuccessful with the treatment. And so what we wanted to do with Lifespera is to bring the modern technology into what is an area that doesn't always use, especially modern computer technology, to allow people to have access to much greater imaging technology, much greater confidence, and ultimately to improve success rates.
Yeah, I'm curious how you came upon this business problem, which is not just a business problem, but a challenge for people all over the world who want to have families and are unable to do so. This is a really unique application of AI technology. So we're excited to hear a bit more about how you came to the idea of being able to solve this problem a little bit.
Yeah, it came about in pieces quite slowly. I was working as a researcher at the University of Adelaide, and we were working, there was a mandate to look at all kinds of different medical applications from engineering, chemistry, physics, and computer standpoints. As part of the project, I happened to be looking at cow embryos and how they would behave with regard to physical resonances and using light to probe those embryos. So it was a very interesting project. But it was one that ultimately, when talking with medical researchers, it would be very hard to turn that into a practical technology to deploy, especially if it involved lasers. And also it would be very costly, expensive to test that, and there would be ethics approval around the use of lasers, which may be solvable, but may take a long time to test. So a couple of my colleagues and researchers in that medical and fertility area were talking about some of the main issues that they face. Something that I wouldn't know as a computational physicist, and that was that they saw a great need for non-invasive technology. And we discussed this together with my co-researchers, that non-invasive was a way forward in the fertility area. And the idea might be that you could do experiments in the lab and understand the health of an embryo using any technique you want, invasive or otherwise, but then you just simulate that and then fix that simulation and turn it into a computer program and then market the computer program as a non-invasive technology. Such a stunning way of thinking about it. And then after I left my job with the university, we had a decision as to who wanted to be involved in the company, who wanted to start building the product. And the people who were really interested in coming on board and building the imaging technology started the company straight off the bat with this wonderful business problem, which we obtained any of the rights, the IP from the university, so that we could get started and up and running in a clean way. It was a really exciting way of starting out. And to be able to develop that idea, I went through a number of really wonderful business planning programs, which really threw you out there and developed your entrepreneurial skill, including the Australian E-Challenge or Entrepreneurs Challenge, which I went through and developed a lot of the early business plan for. So that's how it came about.
This is so interesting. One of the things I think we know about the field of fertility is that there's some ethical considerations. And are there any ethical considerations with this non-invasive technology as you're applying it to IVF?
Yeah, that with IVF, there's always a concern about ethical usage of technologies. And what we find is that people can be quite sensitive to the ethical situations because of the fact that out there, there's a lot of technologies that are not necessarily well tested. So therefore, at the forefront of our minds is that we have a very good, very well-tested technology that's gone through many different trials and tests to make sure absolutely that it's working or that it's doing what we say it does. So that's one of the main key areas of concern. It's just making sure that you've got a reliable and tested technology in such a very hard area as understanding embryos, because they're quite complex and very difficult to understand. There's a lot of ways in which you can solve a problem that's not quite the problem that you mean to solve, or that you're looking at an aspect of the embryo that doesn't necessarily translate to an improvement in pregnancy rate. And therefore, it's a very, very fuzzy, very, very rich subject with many different aspects to it. So to solve this, we tried to keep a very, very constrained problem so that we could be very clear about the experiment we were doing and the exact problem that we were trying to solve in the full IVF process, which is just the one step of, if you look at it as an embryo under a microscope, can you judge which one you should implant, which one's the healthiest one, which one's the unhealthiest ones, and essentially rank them. And instead of using a human eye under the microscope, we use an AI program under the microscope. And the ethics surrounding AI in this area is really a question of, it's a statistical technique. And that statistical technique is a very useful technique and very useful to apply for what is essentially a classification problem. You're trying to classify if an embryo is likely to implant or not likely to implant. And for that reason, a lot of the ethical questions around AI should be centered just around, is this a reliable technique to use in this area?
And do you have any data you can share about the success rate of this technique versus more, I guess, traditional IVF using a subjective selection of the embryo?
Yes, I can. So we've done a number of techniques with a good number of clinics. So we've done one particular study spanned across 12 different clinics across 4 different countries, including the United States, Australia, New Zealand and Malaysia. And overall, what we found was that there's generally a 30% increase in ability to judge what is a healthy embryo or an unhealthy embryo, to classify them correctly, compared with world-leading embryologists. An embryologist is a staff member in the lab who's tasked with doing the judgment of an embryo and also implanting the embryo and doing a lot of other administrative tasks in the lab. They're quite busy and they have a lot of things to do, so the judgment of an embryo is something that is a useful problem to solve. That's something that they don't have a lot of time necessarily to solve, and it's a very hard area using judgment of the eye. And they often use internal scoring methods to work out what's a healthy embryo. What we do is that we look at many thousands of embryos and train an AI model to understand what is a healthy embryo and what is not a healthy embryo. And so it can be much more consistent than a human over across all those examples. It never gets tired. It never gets grumpy. And it's always consistent, which allows it to be a much more transparent benchmark across the different clinics.
What type of hardware outside of the AI portion is required? Is it just a microscope? But how expensive are those microscopes?
This is one of the reasons why we're a little bit different than other technologies working on embryo imaging. We have not tried to target this at a very specific kind of hardware. We have not tried to target it at an elite piece of machinery or a specific microscope. But we've tried to aim it at what is the lowest common denominator microscope, which is a phase contrast microscope. It's a standard microscope that most IVF clinics use in the lab. I don't know how expensive it is, so I can't provide a price point on that, but it would be kind of the minimal cost for a microscope that's used, just a standard phase contrast light microscope. These microscopes are available in almost all clinics and are used to just inspect the embryo. And, you know, with digital microscopes and cameras, it's common practice for IVF clinics to photograph the images in order to provide them to the patients so that they can have a look and make a decision and just for record keeping. So we had this opportunity where people were recording a lot of these microscope images, not really knowing what to do with them, and therefore collecting a really nice data set so that we could potentially train this AI model. So the AI model requires only cloud services. It's completely cloud-based and scalable. It's accessible through a web browser. So all you need is basically a computer that can access the web browser, even if it was a phone or tablet. But we envisage it being used on a desktop computer because you've got the microscope images right there on your computer, as you always would have. But now all you do is an extra step where you can just drag and drop those images onto our drag and drop web interface and then instantly receive a report on the health of each embryo. But to answer your question about the microscopes, we have tried to train the AI to be robust to changes in the microscope light settings and robust to a lot of the different changes that you can have to the environment, the culture media and the way that they grow and the practices that are used in order to average over those many diverse examples so that when you drag and drop, you're not having to worry and think about, oh, was my camera set up correctly? Of course, there's limitations to that. Of course, if the embryo is cropped very badly or very out of focus, you're going to get a much less reliable result. So you want it to have it so that the center of the embryo is as focused as possible and that it's a centered into the embryo with good contrast and there's a sufficient resolution. Of course, that will make the result more reliable, but we have tried not to aim it at a very specific type of hardware, certainly not ship out our own hardware in order to have people use our product, but that they can use it as soon as they have a microscope that's good to go, especially for clinics that don't have the money to be able to do that, especially in countries where it's not as readily affordable. The elite microscopes are not readily affordable.
So could you tell us about any Intel framework optimizations you might be using in your solution?
So in terms of our technology and our AI, we've been working with Intel to use a custom version of our deep learning library. And deep learning is one of those AI techniques that's quite in use at the moment. And one of the reasons why is because it's really suitable for looking at large numbers of images and large data sets and being able to make a robust AI model quite quickly and is very easily usable for computer vision tasks, which this is. So we've been using a custom version of the Intel PyTorch, which we worked with the Intel team. And that's a library that has been custom fit for the Intel hardware, so the Xeon chips that are available in the Amazon servers. And that actually provided us with a speed boost. So we're looking for accuracy. Yes, we want our model to be accurate, but we also don't want the clinician in the lab to be sitting around for a very long time waiting for the number when they've got many other important things to get on with. So speed boost is also a secondary concern after accuracy, where we want to get that number and that AI inference as fast as possible to the clinician in the lab.
How long does it take to go from the clinic uploads the image until you give a response back of the viability of the embryo?
So at the moment, it depends a little bit on the size of the image because a lot of the time is spent in the upload time. If you've got a large number of, like it's several megabytes for the image, then you have to take the upload time. But it basically on average works out to about 20 seconds. It's only if like hundreds of people are using it at once that it starts to slow down quite drastically. 10 minutes is the absolute maximum. We targeted it around about 20 seconds.
That's incredible. I know that we have listeners to this podcast from all around the world, so I'm sure also people are going to be curious. Is this a solution that is available worldwide?
We're targeting this at worldwide. We intend to be worldwide and we're agnostic to the demographic. It's only a question of whether we satisfy and understand the market and the regulatory space in each country. So different countries have their own regulatory framework and we have to comply with those. So each time we consider a new country, we need to understand what is the regulations around it before we can immediately deploy and then offer it to patients through their clinics and then partner with their clinics and get on board customers. But apart from the regulatory frameworks that we need to comply with, we are quite agnostic. There's hardware available through Amazon in a locale that's accessible and allowed because of the regulation for that region and for that country. We can deploy and we can administer the tool in that country immediately.
For when you're working with AWS and cloud service providers, and in a day and age where we're worrying more and more about medical field privacy, how do you work that area?
So we have constructed our app in a way that is HIPAA compliant. That is, it respects the act where personal and private health information is treated in a way that it's basically always encrypted, at rest, and in transit all the time. And wherever possible, any personal information regarding medical information is de-identified. That is, that you make it so that any images are not traceable to any particular patient or patient records as much as possible, and that complete encryption is available and only that information is stored in the database so that anything that's in transit from any server to any other place in order to run the app is done in a secure possible way. So we tried to construct our app in this way, and then we built in all of the auditing trails to comply with HIPAA so that it complies with all of the rules. But then on top of that, we also have a lot of security that we're building in place and also constantly making better by working closely with Amazon system architects, that it's placed in a very secure cloud and it has a lot of the security and cybersecurity in place that is necessary to run something that's using medical data.
So for anyone listening who wants to find out more about this technology and what might be coming ahead in the future, is there a website they can go for more information?
Yes. For the Life Whisperer IVF technology, please go to www.lifewhisperer.co. That's lifewhisperer.co. If they want to find more information about partnering with more and different medical opportunities, then go to the Precigen website, which is www.precigen.com. That's spelled Presagen.com.
Thanks so much, Dr. Hall. This has been a great discussion and one that I think will be so interesting to a lot of people, as most everyone has someone in their lives who's been touched by infertility. So thank you for your time today. It's really been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Emily. It's been a pleasure.
And on behalf of the Intel on AI podcast, this has been Emily Hudson.
And this is Derek Osborne.
Thanks for joining us.